everyone, and welcome to Pop Health Podcast. This is Gavin Ward, co-host of Pop Health Podcast. I'm solo today. Zach Morgan is out and about, and I'm sorry he will be missed on this show. I am super excited today because I was able to travel about 10 minutes from my home for today's show. But actually, that's the secondary reason. The actual main reason why I'm excited is here to see Dr. Jay Enuma, who does quite a lot, actually. And he's worked for some of the largest organizations, including Kaiser Permanente, and also has overseen care coordination in the San Gabriel Valley with Methodist Hospital in Arcadia. Dr. Jay, welcome.
Thank you very much. And you forgot to mention a little insurance company called Aetna. I don't know if you heard of it.
Oh, Aetna. Well, of course. Well, my apologies for that. So Dr. Jay has a wealth of experience as a medical doctor and also with care coordination and a little bit with transitional care as well. And we really want to talk more about his experience and his outlook on the future of healthcare. So Dr. Jay, before we get into that, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe something that the audience wouldn't necessarily know about you or your colleagues may not know about you yet?
Well, I graduated out of UCLA medical school.
Okay.
Then got my EMBA from Marshall School of Business at USC.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So USC and UCLA.
Yeah, I'm just conflicted with them.
It's all right.
Terrible.
So is it whoever's doing well is who you're rooting for?
Absolutely. Actually, I'm still a Bruin at heart.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm happy to hear. My very first college football game was UCLA. My grandfather went there. So.
Righteous.
Yeah.
All right.
It was great. And are you a resident here of the LA area, San
yes.
Gabriel Valley?
Oh, I live over in Sierra Madre.
Okay. Very good. So, Dr. Jay, just getting to know you a little bit, you have a few different hats that you're wearing, and you're actually kind of going through a transition yourself, doing some different things. Tell us about what you've been up to these days.
Well, up to now, I've been running my own clinic here in Arcadia.
Okay.
And also, just became a director of QAPI, Medical Director of Quality Assurance Process Improvement for Fidelity Healthcare over in El Monte. Also been doing a lot of work over in Kaiser's Pasadena Urgent Care. I used to be the physician in charge over at Sunset.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, had their urgent care.
Very good. Yeah. Well, I had the opportunity to interact with some Kaiser folks yesterday at a conference. Kaiser, obviously, and Aetna as well is probably a lot different than I think what a lot of folks are used to that may work in just a straight hospital.
Oh, yeah.
So looking forward to learning more about some of your experiences there. So wearing all these hats, how do you balance everything?
Oh, man, I don't. I just get consumed.
Okay. We're actually sitting across the street from Methodist Hospital in Arcadia. We can see it out the window. I know you spent some time there this morning.
Yeah, I'm still a consultant over there.
Okay. Yeah. So when a doctor is a consultant, what are you assisting hospitals with or what are you helping with?
Great question. Actually, I'm a physician advisor.
Okay.
So if the care coordination department says, this patient does not belong here, they call me so I can look over the case. And if the case looks like it doesn't need admission, then I have to call the physician and say, hey, can you help me understand why this person is still here? That kind of thing.
Okay.
And help guide the physician saying, oh, you're right. So it's educational as well as good for our healthcare system.
Yeah, I bet. Is it a situation where patients might be able to go home sooner in many
Absolutely.
Of those cases?
Absolutely. For example, say that you have a person who's having chest pain.
Okay.
Elderly person. And their EKG looks good. Their lab work looks good. And they're still keeping the patient in the hospital even after the treadmill test comes back normal. I can tell you, those patients can definitely go home.
Yeah. Why do you, you've been a physician in the hospital yourself. Why do physicians, do you think, keep the patients there maybe sometimes longer than they should?
Many times we doctors go into healthcare to help people.
Right.
And so we try to be careful with our patients. Sometimes they keep the patients in longer because they're afraid of sending the patient out too soon and having a readmission, which is pretty bad. So that's one reason why they would keep the patient in longer.
Okay.
I hate to think that they're doing it for monetary reasons, but I know that happens from time to time. But for the most part, we're just really careful because we all want a safe discharge. If you have an unsafe discharge, that's just terrible.
Yeah.
Because they're right back in the ER and everybody's looking at you going, why'd you send a patient home?
Yeah, no, makes sense. Yeah. So you also spend some time in the urgent care setting.
Oh, yeah.
And we know there's a big push in healthcare now where there might be situations where folks used to go to the emergency department. But there's been some education out there that sometimes it's appropriate to go to urgent care. Tell me about your experience in urgent care. Do you see more people being comfortable utilizing an urgent care, or doctors even sending their patients to urgent care versus the ED?
Believe it or not, I think more and more people are becoming more interested in urgent care than ERs because of the copay.
Okay, tell me about that.
Many times a copay could be as much as $150 to go to the ER, whereas just a regular copay as if we went to your regular doctor's office if you go to the urgent care. So that is driving a lot of people to the urgent care. In addition, what's driving people to the urgent care is that they can't see the regular doctor. So when I was a physician in charge at Sunset's urgent care,
okay,
I found that 50% of all visitations were because of no access.
Wow.
So we need more primary care providers out in the community. I say providers, not necessarily physicians, because you got PAs, NPs who can really help this healthcare system see our patients that desperately need it. So
yeah, well, you mentioned NPs and PAs, and I listen to a lot of podcasts, not just Pop Health podcasts, believe it or not. And obviously, there's a lot of talk about the future of healthcare, a shortage of primary care MDs.
40,000.
Yeah. And there's a push in the education system for getting more instructors, more classes, more NPs for our future.
You know what I find absolutely surprising is people in the industry, as well as layperson, they don't know that most of us primary care doctors have a panel size of about 2,000 to 2,500 patients each.
Wow. So how much, so you have plenty of time to see each patient. Not really.
Well, that's actually, yeah, that's actually a very interesting observation, because presently we have fee for service.
Right.
So everything's volume based. But in the very near future, I'd say 2018, 2019, as much, just short as 1 or 2 years, we're going to see more pay for performance, more
right.
quality metrics,
yeah.
which I think is going to mandate that the physicians spend more time with their patients, really tackle their issues in a more deeper level
yeah.
than the, oh, look, 5 minutes in, out. I waited 2 hours to see you, and
yeah.
that kind of thing. So we're going to see more quality. Therefore, our access is going to go down. And again, if your access goes down, that means more visits to the urgent care.
Hmm.
So that's what we're going to see as well. In fact, what's also pushing it is insurance companies. They're asking their IPAs and medical groups to, on the recording, say, if you have an emergency, call 911. But they also want them to say, call 911 or visit your local urgent care instead of visit your local ER.
Yeah.
So they want that.
Okay. Got it. So we talked a little bit about quality and value. But before we get more into that, how in the world did you end up becoming a medical doctor?
You know, I just wanted to make a difference, because what I see is we all just want to make a difference.
Right.
We don't want to go through life saying, yeah, I took up space, I breathed air, I ate food, and I'm dead, and it didn't matter.
Yeah.
It made no difference. Nobody wants to be that. I think we're all on that quest for significance. We all just want to matter. This is how I want to matter, making a difference in other people's lives. But at this point in my life, making a difference, not in just a one person's life, like one-off, but like communities.
Yeah. So speaking of community, when you, where were you when you had this moment of thinking, I want to be a doctor? Were you here in the LA area? Or?
Oh, I grew up in the LA area. So okay. I was about, how old are you when you're in second grade? About 8 years
old? 7, 8 years old, yeah.
Yeah, I was 8 years old.
And you stuck to it?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I even took German in high school.
Okay.
Which, of course, is absolutely useless. But that's okay if you want to go into healthcare. There's
yeah.
only one word in medicine that's German.
Yeah, there's. It's funny. One of the most successful healthcare futurists is actually based in Germany.
Ah.
Forgive me, his name is... but yeah, I was pretty shocked to see that. So, 8 years old... You're going to become a doctor. We talked a little bit about your schooling and background. You mentioned you grew up in the area.
Mm-hmm. In Torrance, California.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ah, I was born down there. Little
no
Company
way.
Mary. Yep.
I was born there too.
Ah,
in
how
fact,
about that?
I volunteered there. I think, yeah, spent 4 years volunteering.
Small world.
Yeah. My mom still volunteers there.
Okay. Well, shout out to Total Company from Dr. J and I.
Right on.
So now you've been a doctor. You've worn many hats, and you've also led care coordination teams, including right across the street here in Arcadia. And I know most folks with care coordination names in their title may not necessarily be an MD. And I was curious, from a medical doctor's perspective, working with nurses and other care coordination folks, what were some of the challenges you had with the patient population, and maybe some of the conversational challenges you had, whether with the patients or with your teams?
Well, I'm going to just admit this. When I got that job, I did not know as much as I should have known.
Okay.
It's a learning process the whole way through. And you just do the best you can with what you got, right?
Right.
So that's exactly what I did. I just kept asking questions, referring to people who are smarter than I was. And I think some of the biggest challenges were trying to convince the doctor about the business aspects of medicine, the fiscally responsible thing to do with patients and patient care, and getting them to understand about the continuum of care, LTACs, SNFs, assisted living facilities, etc., home care, home health, that kind of thing. That is all along the continuum of care. And to have people understand that is sometimes a challenge, because they get comfortable. Oh, I have a patient in the hospital. I'll keep seeing them in the hospital. When in fact, they should probably transition over to an LTAC if they're going to be there for 18 days or more.
Right. Mm-hmm. And for those of you in the audience, I know it's mostly healthcare professionals here, but LTAC is long-term acute care. Some of you may be familiar with, I guess, the largest in the nation, which is Kindred Healthcare. I know you had met with one of your Kindred colleagues recently.
Oh, yeah. We had dinner last night in Torrance.
Okay. Do you mind if I mention the name?
Oh, Brooke Saunders?
A little shout out to Brooke Saunders.
She's a fantastic person. Oh, man. If I come back to life like her, I'll be set. She is a terrific person.
Well, very good. We were actually talking before the recording. Brooke was one of our very first guests on Pop Health Podcast. We recorded down in Kindred Westminster, places, down there in Orange County. And Brooke really helped kick off the podcast to what it is today. We're recording nearly our 60th episode today.
Wow. Well, shout out to Brooke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just really appreciate the opportunity to work with her. And just Kindred's a great organization. My best friend, shout out to Rich Kellogg, is a recruiter there. And Kindred has a special place in my circles.
And they have some fantastic employees there, like Justin.
Yeah.
That guy is fantastic.
Awesome. So, well, some good shout outs today.
I know.
So here in the San Gabriel Valley, where I'm a resident, Dr. J is a resident, there's a diverse population, as with many places in L.A. San Gabriel Valley, we see English, of course, and then Spanish, but also a lot of Asian dialects with a large Chinese population, especially Mandarin, Cantonese.
In Arcadia, 53% Chinese speaking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mandarin.
I live in the area, too, and my wife has Asian heritage. So a lot of the culture, language, there's a lot of different ways of looking at medicine. And I was curious about some of the challenges you may have seen here in San Gabriel Valley and how you've been able to be successful with this patient population.
Well, it has a lot to do with culture, of course, that's what we're talking about. And what I learned here at Methodist is if a person of, say, Chinese heritage passes away in the home, they have a very difficult time selling the home.
Yeah.
Because the thought process is, oh, they're still in the home. How dare I sell this home?
Hmm.
And so when you're discharging the patient to pass away in their home, not going to happen.
So sorry to interrupt, but does that mean hospice acceptance is very minimal among
in homes? Oh, yeah. Because it's a topic that's very difficult to broach in most cultures, but especially my experience anyway, in the Chinese population. So,
yeah. So how do you overcome some of those challenges? Do you have a lot of staff that can speak the language even?
Yes. And also we have translation devices, things like that, like our phones.
Okay.
And so we also have a very good palliative care physician, Dr. Michael Cortez.
Okay.
Very sensitive, very caring, very competent palliative care physician. And he broaches a topic with palliative care and the transition of life as well. That doesn't mean that all his patients go into hospice, but he broaches the topic, introduces a conversation. And that's really important because a lot of physicians, primary care physicians, have a difficult time because our patients tend to become our friends.
Right.
We have a very strong relationship with them. And I'm saying, hey, you're my buddy, ready to die? No, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So it's very hard to have that conversation, but it is a natural part of life.
Right.
That, you know, the expiration process. And our palliative care team is very good getting them into hospice for, so going back to that original topic, what do you do with this population as they're going through that change?
Right.
Many times we have GIP here at the hospital, general inpatient. So
yeah.
If they only have 3 to 5 days left to live, 3 days, I think it is, then they can expire in the hospital.
Okay.
Which is acceptable in that instance to the Chinese population, or right. they can go to a skilled nursing facility. So that's one way to circumvent the patient going home and expiring there.
Yeah, very good. And then how about Western medicine in general with the patient population that you've seen? I know I have some extended family members who, you know, they're not necessarily against it, but they may prefer other methods.
Sure.
And I'm curious in your time if you've seen folks go against medical advice and how you are able to politely steer them to mm-hmm. maybe consider it. Any challenges there?
You know, I don't think it's necessarily nationality-based,
okay.
culturally-based at all. I think it's more the norm to go to Dr. Google
yeah.
and challenge the doctor and say, you know, I don't think so. Because I read this side effect on the 155th line of side effects. It says that I can have, like, constipation. I don't want that. And,
yep.
And it goes, did you look at the 53rd? It says diarrhea.
Yeah. yeah.
So this thing can cause both and... Yeah, they just don't understand how that works. It's more of it's a possibility versus a probability, and that's what I try to explain to my patients. But regardless of national heritage, it's always a patient choice.
Right.
Because I can't go home with the patients and feed them the pills. How do I really know that they're really taking it?
Yep.
So I step back and say, you know, as a physician, I am a consultant. I can advise you what to do. It's up to you to do it.
Yeah.
And because a lot of us in healthcare forget that we have that little concept called patient responsibility.
Yep.
Yeah.
yeah. Well, I know for you, when you were 8, you felt called mm-hmm. to be a doctor. You wanted to make a difference and maybe be responsible with people's health. Mm-hmm. And I was curious if you've had any success stories, of course, without naming names, but is there anything that stood out so far in your career where you said, you know what, I made a responsible decision and this person's life is for the better because of me. Anything stand out to you?
Oh, man. I'll pick one.
Okay. yeah.
So I have my own clinic here.
Okay.
All my patients have my personal cell number.
Wow.
Yeah. So
I wasn't special when I had your cell.
All right. You're still special, Gavin.
Thanks.
So 9 o'clock at night,
yeah.
my patients just getting done, just basically babysitting her grandchildren.
Yeah.
And she says, Dr. J, I've got this sinus congestion. I'm sick. And I'm going, well, it could be a number of things besides sinusitis. So tell you what, where are you right now? Where are you right now? Well, I'm on the freeway heading home. Oh, well, I'll just see you in the morning. No, you don't understand. I have to take my real estate license in San Diego tomorrow morning. I have to leave my house at 5. I went, ooh, bad situation.
Yeah.
Where are you right now? I'm on the freeway around somewhere in San Gabriel. I said, tell you what, I'll meet you over at the parking lot at Costco.
Yeah.
In, you know, off Azusa.
Yeah.
I met her in the parking lot, did my exam in the parking lot. And her boyfriend just could not believe it was happening.
Yeah.
And made the diagnosis, got her the meds. I say, take this, go to a 24-hour pharmacy. And so she did. She got down to San Diego. She passed the test. She's a real estate agent now.
Awesome, man.
And Michelle's doing great right now. So
awesome.
That looked, it was so rewarding to be able to do that for her.
Yeah, well, that's a great story. And I know, you can't do that every moment of every day, but it's neat to see that when you did have mm-hmm. the opening and you had the opportunity, you made that choice
right.
to go see her. And it's something that she'll hopefully never forget. And clearly you've never forgotten.
Oh yeah. In fact, just 2 weeks ago, one of my colleagues, Jackie, she says, you know, Jay, my kid's really sick. Where do I go? What do I do? And I said, well, it's like 9:30 again. That's magic 9:30 hour. And it was on a Saturday.
Yeah.
And so I met her over at this clinic here and saw her and her daughter. Daughter did just fine. It was pretty fantastic to be able to do that.
Yeah. Well, good for you. Well, I'm not going to give your cell phone number out here on the show, but are you taking on new patients at this
time? Absolutely.
Okay. And where's your clinic located? What city?
It's in Arcadia.
Okay.
Right across the street from the hospital.
Okay. Very good. And is it general practice, primary care?
Family medicine.
Very good. So folks out there, if you're in the San Gabriel Valley and need a good doctor.
Well, thanks for the plug.
Of course. So you work at Kaiser,
yes.
Urgent care, a couple days a week, a couple times a month.
Well, last month was 146 hours.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
so almost a full time.
Almost.
Yeah. So I know it's an urgent care center, but you can tell us a little bit about, in your experience, how working for Kaiser might be different than some of the other work that you've done.
Well, working for Kaiser is fantastic because it is probably one of the best healthcare organizations on the planet.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was over at Kaiser, I worked there for 16 years.
Okay.
We had people from China, people from England, just touring our facility in Pasadena to figure out, what are you guys doing? What are you doing right? So, and it has everything to do with integrative health.
Yeah.
So we have Kaiser has an exclusivity agreement with their providers.
Okay.
They have their own health insurance. They have their own hospitals.
Yeah.
If I were in, let's say, San Diego, and I saw a physician there, and then I come up to LA and I saw the urgent care doctor here, they can pick up where the San Diego doctor left off.
Absolutely.
Through the EMR, Epic.
Yeah.
And the way they do things is so standardized and so efficient that people don't have their preventive health issues missed.
Yeah.
And it's just that strong because preventive health is about a seventh of the cost of acute care.
Right.
So.
And one thing that's neat about Kaiser is they're at the forefront of investing in that preventative care.
Oh, yeah.
And
it's fantastic.
I at one point was a Kaiser member through insurance through my employer. And, you know, I went from a PPO to kind of an HMO with Kaiser in a sense, right?
Right.
So, you know, some people might have their concerns about that for one reason or another. And I'd heard their concerns and it was top of mind with me when I became a Kaiser member and had a very positive experience. So I agree with you. There's also another group called Geisinger out in Pennsylvania who is very similar, even doing things maybe a little bit differently as well. So we're seeing a lot of this movement to integrated care. And recently you did a talk here in the San Gabriel Valley talking about the future of healthcare and where you see more healthcare in the home, which of course is where going. And I read a paper of yours that talks about how home care and home health have a bright future. Just kind of want to hear more about that from you and tell us about why home care and home health have a bright future.
Well, it has everything to do with readmission reduction, everything to do with that. Because as it stands, we have bundled payment arrangements, CJR, comprehensive joint replacement.
Right.
And if the patient's involved with those DRGs, disease-related groups, then if they get readmitted within 30 days, any cause except scheduled chemotherapy or acts of God, like, you know, get hit by a bus or something like that, well, that'll count as a readmission if they get readmitted within 30 days of the discharge.
Right.
So what's found is that if they go to, say, a skilled nursing facility, in 2011, it was a 21% readmission average.
Right.
In 2014, they did the study again. It was 19%. The standard in the community is 14%. So if they go home, you can expect a 14%. Why would Medicare want to pay more to have a higher readmission rate? So that's why Medicare's pushing patients home.
Right.
It makes total sense. And so how do you keep the patients from being readmitted? Home health, home care. Because I don't know what my patients' homes look like. I don't know if they have poor lighting. They have wires crossing in front of their living room. If there's an increased risk for falls, that kind of thing.
Right.
when a home health agency goes out there, they can do that home health assessment, yeah. which is fantastic. In addition, they can pretty much on a weekly basis, if not more, make sure that the patients are doing well. So, and sometimes it's very hard to come in to see the physician.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. And not to mention the copay costs, et cetera. Having home health involved is pretty much going to be very important in the future of patient care. And home care, which is different than home health, my wife read that paper. She goes, what's the difference?
Right.
So I had to explain.
Yeah.
Home care is basically people who go to the home and they do light cleaning, light cooking. They can schedule appointments. They can make sure that the medicines are laid out in their little pill bottles and pill thingies.
Yeah, dispensers.
Dispensers, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, so that there's less confusion.
Pill boxes, yeah.
And they can actually kind of look and say, hey, did you take your pill today?
Right.
So that kind of thing. And basically be eyes for the families. And that reassurance is worth, gosh, so much. And I actually think Medicare is going to reimburse home health and it's already reimbursing home health, but it's going to be reimbursing home care in the future. That's my prediction there. It just makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with you. I've been saying that for years. And we're starting to see some places through kind of, we call it a workaround funding, if you will,
with
bundle payment for care improvement. There's Medicare funding that's going to an episode initiator, which could be a hospital, could be a skilled nursing facility. And in certain states and certain areas, they're given freedom to pass that money to what's called the downstream provider.
Oh, there you go.
And I've been fortunate in my day-to-day job working for a home care company, 24-hour home care, where we are that non-medical that's currently not reimbursed by CMS, but we're starting to see like that workaround funding. Mm-hmm. And there's dozens of, right here in California, of organizations that are actually funding that type of care directly.
But I also think it has a lot to do with the physician's responsibility to educate their patients about home health and how it differs from home care. Because if you have a home care agency in the home, they're like an early warning detection system.
Well
said. Instead of having the patient say, oh, I got a bad cough. Now I have a bad cough with a fever. Now I'm debilitated in the bed.
Yeah.
A family member comes over like 5 days later and they're stuck in bed. Well, now you really got an admission happening. You have a home care person coming to the home, just observing the patient, and if they can say, you know what, this person's not really doing so well, let me get on the phone and try to get an appointment with the regular doctor.
Yeah.
And so they can really steer healthcare toward making sure that the patients are getting care early versus getting care further downstream where it can cost a lot more money.
Absolutely. So you say physicians should describe the difference. Do you, in all honesty, feel that most medical doctors know that non-medical home care, or what we refer to as home care versus home health, is out there and a real resource?
I hate to say it. I really didn't know any of this until after I left Kaiser.
Yeah.
I didn't know what a SNF was.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know what an LTAC stood for, long-term acute care hospital.
Yeah.
I didn't even know what a home health was or home care and why would I would even bother.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden a whole new vocabulary opened up, and then as you observe it, you start to understand how everything sort of integrates.
Right.
Comes together. And as long as we stay out of the silos and aren't afraid to cooperate with one another and in the industry, I think we're all going to do great. In fact, it's funny. I was at a Killers concert waiting for the show to start. Guy to the left of me, and I got into a conversation.
Yeah.
A little random stranger. And he taught me this word called co-opetition.
Ah.
Cooperation. And you're still competitors, but you're still cooperating to make things even better.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, I haven't heard that one.
Yeah. Co-opetition.
I like it. So as we wrap up the show today, before we get to the close, in that paper and some of the presentations and the homework that I've done before today's show, one thing you mentioned is insurance companies tend to follow Medicare, which I'd heard about before, to be upfront, but I didn't hear it too often. What do you mean by insurance companies tend to follow Medicare?
Well, commercial insurance, They tend to follow Medicare, but only reimburse at about 80% of Medicare rates.
Okay.
Medicare kind of sets a standard, and it's just an observation.
Okay.
Over the last 5-6 years, noticing that what's covered in Medicare will then start to be covered by the commercial players.
Okay.
And that's what I mean by that.
Got it.
That's how they follow.
Yeah. And for Medicare, one thing we talked about off air is there's a lot of great ideas out there. And we see some of these healthcare professionals nod their head, say that makes sense. But in order for anything to be approved by Medicare, what has to happen, Dr. J?
I'll tell you what has to happen. You got to get that buy-in.
I mean, from?
The physicians.
Okay.
Believe it or not.
Yeah. And then who gets legislation, right?
Right, absolutely. Legislators. But many times it's the stories that the physicians tell the legislators. That's what makes the difference. When I was with the, I'm still with the California Academy of Family Physicians, part of their political action committee. And that's what makes the difference, where we have to speak up as physicians, as healthcare industry workers. We have to speak up to our legislators to let them know what the issues are. Very hard to fix something when you don't know what's wrong.
Right.
So, number one, the physicians have to understand what the problem is. They have to say, oh yeah, not just that's a great idea, but actually have the ability to change. In the industry of medicine, physicians are very reticent to change. They're very used to, well, we always do it this way. Green phlegm always means pneumonia. Yeah, baloney. So, as they get a voice and they speak to their legislators, and as other people join the bandwagon to speak to the legislators, that's when change is going to happen.
Absolutely. And I think we've both been in healthcare for a while, and the amount of change that's happening the last few years, the upcoming next years, where physician reimbursement is actually going to change, and they'll see their checks potentially.
The MIPS and the APM. You know, the reason why things have to change is because we are in $1 trillion of waste in our system.
Right.
That has to change. If we keep doing the same thing over and over again, we're going to be at $2 trillion.
Yeah.
You solve this problem, you made a dent in our national debt.
Absolutely. And for the acronyms that you just mentioned, do you mind explaining to the audience what those are? You mentioned MIPS and APM.
Right. Alternative Payment Model. MIPS is the Medicare. Oh, I can't remember.
Medicare.
It's part of MACRA, which is that chip thing.
Yep.
Reauthorization Act. Yeah.
Yeah. So just a payment reform, basically. So physicians, some of them, I've talked to some folks, they don't even realize it yet, that their checks are going to be potentially greater, but possibly smaller.
Not possibly.
Well,
it will be lower at 4% right off the bat.
Yeah.
And if you don't participate, you can expect a 9% reduction.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're part of the APM, alternative payment model, where you're part of an ACO.
Yeah.
Then you can actually see a 5% increase. So you're absolutely right. If you play ball, you can actually make more money than you otherwise would have.
Absolutely. So. Well, Dr. Jay Enuma has been our guest today, folks. Really appreciate your time, Dr. Jay.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And appreciate your candor with some of the challenges you've had. And you revealed some vulnerability in the show today. And we really appreciate that. I just want to thank my colleague, Serena Saldana, for setting this up. And I look forward to possibly having you again down the road and hearing some of the efforts that you, or some of the successes from your work at the Political Action Committee. Changing those laws is an
uphill battle.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, again, Dr. Jay Enuma has been our guest today, folks, and he is taking on new patients here in the San Gabriel Valley. Again, if you like the show, please go ahead and like us on iTunes. Feel free to leave a comment there as well. You can download us there. You can see us on Stitcher. And, of course, you can stream us at pophealthpodcast.com. Thanks so much, everyone, for joining us. Take care. Pop Health Podcast is a public service of 24-hour home care.